The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms. It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins. Guys, Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And once again, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about youth sports with our special return guest, Pulitzer Prize-nominated journalist and author Harvey Arrington. And it's going to be a tremendous conversation. You know, think about it. What happened to the joy in youth sports nowadays? It's such a multi-billion dollar business now between coaching, professional coaches, road travel, travel teams, year-round sports. I'm out here in Southern California, yet I grew up in New Jersey. And I played Little League, and then we had other leagues. And, you know, you play and then you leave. And of course, some kids got ahead. But nowadays, there's so many kids involved. It's so hard to break through to the professional level. And they've just turned sports and youth sports into this money-making machine. Created a lot of anxiety, and it's taken a lot of joy out of playing. And my guest, Harvey Arrington, has written this book called The Goal of the Game. We're going to get into it. It's all about how can we find, and if we can find, refine, and rediscover the joy in youth sports.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, Guys Guys Radio is the interview portion of our show, and I'm always delighted when we have a guest who can discuss sports. And I've got Harvey Arrington back on Guys Guys Radio, and we're going to talk about his latest book. It's a kids and adult book, and it's a very important book. It's called Goal of the Game, and it's all about the importance and the ups and downs and ins and outs of kids sports today in America. And I can relate to that because I have a 12-year-old son who's going through everything that the main character in this book has gone through. Let me tell you a little bit about Harvey, a longtime sports journalist who has written for four New York newspapers, including working 25 years for the New York Times, where he wrote the Sports of the Times column. He's the author, co-author, and editor of 9 books, Driving Mr. Yogi, which was a great one about Ron Guidry and Yogi Berra. When the Garden was Eden, that was made into an ESPN 30 for 30 documentary, which he co-produced, and he's also the author of a novel, Cold Type, published in 2014. Harvey was nominated by The Times for the Pulitzer Prize in 1994. He's a media inductee into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in 2017. He's just an amazing guy. He lives in Montclair, New Jersey. I'm always delighted when he comes back on the show with a new book. Welcome back to Guys Guys Radio, Harvey Arreton.
Thank you for having me, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here, as it was in the past.
Well, thank you so much. So, kids sports. I have a 12-year-old son. You have 2 boys who are grown up now, and they both played kids sports. My son, he's in doing baseball, but I can relate. The book's about soccer. So many things he's going through in baseball, because we're out in Carlsbad, California, which is a really hotbed of sports, much more so than when I grew up in New Jersey, where it was baseball season in the spring. The bats stung your hands because it was cold out. And then once it came into summer, you did your own thing. And then in fall, I played soccer. And in winter, it was wrestling or basketball. But now it's all year round and multiple sports and a lot of scheduled juggling and a lot of money invested with road teams and so much other stuff, putting such the pressure on sports. And just the other day, my team, we played another team that had all these travel ball kids on there. And I'm an assistant coach. And we got clobbered. And it was just no contest. And some of the kids on our team were, not my son, but some of the kids were crying after they struck out and stuff. And I'm like, there's no joy here. And I told my son, who struck out his first time up, and he came over and I said to him, make like it's batting practice. I said, what happened? He said, I was afraid. I said, what were you afraid of? He said, I was afraid of striking out. I said, well, you struck out. Nothing happened. Get back out there and hit like you do in practice. Sure enough, the next time up, he hit the furthest ball out of anybody during the game over the right fielder's head. And he turned out and he had a good game. But baseball and soccer, they're up and down sports. But the point is, what's going on with kids' sports today? And what inspired you, Harvey, to write this book?
Well, yeah, we're dealing with a youth sports environment today that is really nothing like the youth sports culture, certainly when I was a kid. In some ways, there are improvements. There's, you know, better facilities, better conditioning, probably better coaching. But those improvements have come with a steep cost. We are now dealing with a youth sports industry that was estimated to be worth $40 billion in this country by the New York Times in a front page story last summer. There are now major private equity companies that are investing heavily in youth sports. One example is a company called Unrivaled, which is owned by the people who own the Philadelphia 76ers, a guy named Josh Harris and his partner, and the New Jersey Devils. They are owners of both those franchises. Now, yes, they are building state-of-the-art facilities, but we can also extrapolate that people who are getting into the business of youth sports and building state-of-the-art facilities and creating national tournaments for 10-year-olds are not necessarily in the business to create healthy, developing young people. They are in it for profit. And that has really changed the industry. It's put a lot of pressure on parents who, you know, are tempted to get their kids involved, being told by these companies that if you don't get on board early, your child will be left behind. No parent, you know, would want to deprive their kid of the possibility, remote as it might be, that their kid might be that rare exception, that diamond in the rough, to become a Division I college athlete and reap the benefits of all this NIL money, name, image, and likeness money that is now circulating around college sports, which is really de facto professional sport now, particularly in baseball, in football and basketball. Yep. Or potentially become an Olympian or a professional athlete. The chances are remote, but, you know, the temptations are great. So many parents, many families are stretching, if not breaking, their financial budgets. Other families that can't afford this are being left behind. It's really creating a professionalized environment in youth sports. And that is a very dangerous thing as it relates to as I mentioned before, the healthy development of kids from the ages of 7, 8, 9, 10, who are feeling the pressure of their parents' investments, mm-hmm. of, you know, these heightened stakes for young children to make it to the travel team or to the select team, and then to make it to the regional tournament and to the national tournament. So this has all changed. And the reason why I wrote this book is that in around the turn of the century, when I was still writing columns for the New York Times, I started exploring some of these youth issues, starting with the realization around 2001, 2002, that the Little League World Series, which when I was a kid, ABC's Wide World of Sports would televise the championship game out of Williamsport. It was a novelty, kind of cool to see the kids playing. But by the turn of the century, ESPN, which is obviously drives much of what happens in televised sports, had gotten to the point where they were televising every Little League champion, Little League game of the World Series annually. And I remember writing a column where I posed the question to the Little League people, are we celebrating children or are we exploiting them? And I remember talking to a psychologist who worked with a lot of kids in youth sports. And he said, you know, the idea of kids appearing on TV is nothing new. They've been on game shows for generations. So it's not that they're not capable of being on television. The question that it raises is, what will parents, coaches, and communities at large do to get those kids to those positions? How much pressure will they cheat, as we've seen many cases of that in sports? Will they get into arguments when the championship games are on the line and they feel their kids have been unfairly called out on strikes, or, you know, a goal was allowed when the other team may have been offside? These are the things that have really raised the stakes and the emotions on all levels. And I just think, so I decided after writing many stories in the Times, but those were directed at parents, about 3 or 4 years ago, I decided, you know, it would be kind of cool to write a book in the voice of a young kid, 12 years old in the case of our lead character in this book, and try to speak directly to children, as well as their parents, who hopefully will read the book, but to speak directly to children to reinforce what the most beneficial aspects of playing youth sports are, particularly at those ages of 8 to 12, which is the targeted age of this book, give or take, depending on you know, how precocious the reader is. And when I say foundational benefits of youth sports, what I mean are learning to be a coachable kid, learning to be a good teammate, learning how to win and lose gracefully, learning how to get along with kids from all different kinds of backgrounds. Those are the things that kids should be playing for in those early ages. And I've said to parents over and over again while promoting this book, if your child is 8 or 9 years old, and he or she is playing for the potential possibility of a Division I scholarship at those ages in particular, then they are playing for all the wrong reasons.
Do you think, Harvey, and I want to get into the book, but one last question on just the kids' youth sports. Do you think there was a tipping point and an inciting incident, if you will, that happened that turned the fun off and turn the profit on when it comes to youth sports?
Well, I think just, you know, again, going back to that that epiphany that I had about how the ESPN had turned Little League Baseball into a for-profit center. Every year for at least, 2 or 3 weeks, maybe longer, for the month of August, Little League Baseball becomes a staple of cable television, whether it's ESPN televising the Williamsport games or regional networks like YES in the New York metropolitan area, which is the Yankees network, televising, you know, games that determine the Connecticut winner or the New Jersey winner. I think that was sort of like a flashpoint in our history that essentially told us that corporate America was ready to profit from the games that kids traditionally had played for fun. I mean, there's always been, you know, youth sports has always been to some degree, Robert, about, you know, the advancement of the most special athletes, you know, on a, putting kids on a track that would get them to become high school stars or college players. But now you have that incentivizing, you know, the money pouring into it, getting, you know, it's a question of how college sports have mimicked professional sports, and now you have youth sports mimicking college sports, and it's all profit driven. And that's not why kids, at least in those vulnerable years, those early grammar school years, on into, let's say, pre-adolescence, that's not why kids should be playing sports.
Okay. My special guest back on Guys Guys Radio, Harvey Arreton. The new book is Goal of the Game. And I know, Harvey, you think it's a kid's book. I think it's an adult. It's equally, if not more important for adults to read this, to get inside the mindset of kids, because there's so much anxiety. Sports creates joy and can be a lot of fun. The way it's being profitized now, if you will, and monetized, is creating anxiety. I noticed as an assistant coach, I had a kid yesterday crying because he wasn't hitting enough in practice, crying. I'm like, what's the matter? He goes, I'm just terrible. I said, hey, I said, listen, the best hitters in baseball, they make out 7 out of 10 times. Relax. This is practice. Practice is for learning. Then we get to the games. Don't worry about it. It's just repetitions. But I felt so bad. And I see these kids and I don't see the smiles. And I remember how much fun I had when I was in Little League. So let's talk about the book, though. The book takes place, the backdrop is soccer in New Jersey, and the main character's name is Z, or Zane, and he's a good player, not a great player. He's kind of a little bit undersized, and he goes through a journey where his dad was his coach, and then he has a coach from England, and then he has an American coach, and something happens with his dad, and he sees things happen with his friends along the way, and he sees the seriousness, the seriousness dial for his soccer participation go up, up, up throughout the story until he has his moment and says, this is how I want to live my life. Talk to us about the book and the story and the main character and some of the trials and tribulations he goes through.
Sure. Well, the book starts off with Z waking up on the morning of his U13, he's 12 years old, U13 fall season opener. And at this point, the team, which started as, you know, a neighborhood rec league team when the kids were 5 years old playing in a program called basically Kinder Kickers for kindergarten kids, and coached by Z's dad. It traces, so he wakes up, you know, and it's at the point where he's now 12 years old. And the team has progressed from being kind of a hopeless rec league team to a very, very good now select team. You go from rec league, town league, to travel team. And then the next level is select team, where kids can, it's not just, you know, a town, a particular town or neighborhood. It's kids from all over a region. And so, you know, by this point, in his career, the team is now, you know, vying for, they're part of an academy, they're vying for a national tournament. The thing is that the best friends that Z has had from his neighborhood that he's played with for several years, some have been cut, some have dropped out because we've got too crazy and competitive. So he's now at the point where he's been pretty much surrounded by kids who are very good players, like Z, but are unfamiliar to him. And he's at a point in his life where we hint, we don't specifically say what has happened, but there's been some family trauma with his dad. And so he wakes up and he no longer is getting any joy out of playing for this team, because he's at a point in his young life where what he needs from soccer is to be surrounded by his friends, the people who know him and love him, to get him through what has become a difficult personal situation. And he walks down. His mother is the driving force. You know, she's the team manager. She's the one with all the ambition to get them to this national tournament. And he has to break the news to his mother that he doesn't want to play anymore, that he's going to quit. It's really hard for him to do, because he knows it'll break his mother's heart, but that's what he does. Then the book flashes back to the very beginning of Z's career when his dad is his coach. It takes us through the years where this advancement is occurring, the accident that befalls his father, and where he needs new coaches. Okay. And eventually, you know, explores all the pleasures, but also the perils of youth sports. Okay. And then brings us back to the point where Z quits, and then that sets up the concluding chapters, which probably I worked on harder to get it right, to have the kind of conclusion that would leave young readers feeling good about the things
right.
That encapsulate youth sports. And also, you know, it's essentially underscores the fact that it's a story about self-discovery. Mm-hmm. Z coming to the conclusion and the terms under which he is willing to play soccer.
Okay.
And that, of course, is the moral of the story.
Let's talk a little bit about the male and female characters and archetypes, if you will, and symbolism. You've got the dad that was the mentor for Z, and then he's kind of he's pushed into the background through something that happens to him. And then an English coach, good guy, takes over. And then he's got a real tough American coach who's more in line with the mother, who's more of a type A than the dad is. Did you see the father and what happened to him in the story as you were crafting it as a reflection of the American male dad nowadays? Or was it just kind of something that worked for the story in other ways?
Well, his dad, you know, grew up at the game. He grew up in a town in the book that, as obviously a fictional character, in Kearny, New Jersey, which is known as Soccer Town USA.
Right.
A lot of the early American World Cup players mm-hmm. Came from Kearny. It's a place where many Scottish immigrants settled, you know, in the 20th century. The father really has a full understanding of what youth sports should be. You know, he constantly reinforces when the team is formed that it's not about winning and losing. It's about the kids learning to love the game mm-hmm. and learn the fundamentals and all the things we mentioned earlier about being good teammates, learning to win and lose gracefully, all of that stuff. But then the father goes through a long convalescence where he can't be involved in it. So this kind of creates a number of, you know, surrogate dads for Z mm-hmm. Through the coaches, a couple of relatives, fathers of friends who want to help Z through this difficult period. So Kevin, who was the English coach, kind of picks up where Z's dad left off, but only is able to take them to a certain point because I think it's when fifth or sixth grade, Kevin has to return to England. He's from Liverpool because of his own family obligations. By this time, the team is enrolled in the elite academy on Staten Island, which is where mm-hmm. the story takes place. They play in New Jersey, so they're playing a lot of New Jersey towns, but they live in Staten Island, which is, you know, New York City's most
okay.
suburban borough. The coach, who's the American coach, is all about ambition and drive, pushing the kids, saying things mm-hmm. to them like, I need some kids to lose some teeth for me. It's all yeah. about, you know, selling them on
right.
these grandiose futures, college scholarships, all of that stuff, national rankings. And this is the point where Z starts to question whether or not this is something he really wants to be involved in. And so, yes, that coach, the American coach, kind of symbolizes the new youth sports culture
mm-hmm.
in this country right now, driving the kids, putting pressure on them, only the strong will survive,
right.
and essentially making it not about what you mentioned earlier, joy, but about achievement and ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that basically turn off a lot of kids and induce them to quit by the time they are 13 or 14, which is terribly unfortunate.
Okay. My return guest, the Guys Guys Radio, Harvey Arreton, a new book, Goal of the Game, a great book about sports for parents and for kids. My 12-year-old, who's a big reader, he promised that he's going to read the book and he's looking forward to it. And he apologized he couldn't get it done before our conversation, but he will. And he's going to send you an email with a review of it. So look forward to that. The female characters in the book, you've got the mom who's more of a type A. She's more in line with the American coach. And I was wondering if that was by design, and if there was something behind that and symbolically. And number two, you've got a couple of female characters who are friends with Z, and they are good players, and they kind of get pushed aside by the American coach because he just doesn't think they're going to be able to keep up as the team rises, that he needs like bigger kids and he needs guys on the team. What's your point of view about the mom and her role, and also the two gals who were good friends to Z, good players, and they kind of got pushed aside?
No, well, the mom, I think, is she's a very loving mother, but it also relates to the trauma that she's had to experience with the accident that occurs with her husband, and she kind of misinterprets what he would have wanted for his son. They love the game. The dad loved the game, wanted his son to play. Even the fact that he has a name that starts with a Z is for one of the great French players that the dad, worshipped when he was a kid, Zidane from France.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's her misreading of what her husband would have wanted for Z had he not become injured and unable to coach him and be his mentor in the game. She just gets a little too carried away and buying into the whole new culture of youth sports in the country. Even though her intentions are good, it's just her interpretation goes off the rails a little bit. The two girls on the team, one of whom is one of Z's best friends and probably the girl he has a crush on, as he reaches, pre-adolescence. She's very wise. She's an only child. And, Z always talks about how she seems like an adult. So she's sort of like, his guiding angel mm-hmm. as a teammate, pointing out some of the things that are starting to go a little haywire with the team. Like one of the kids.
She's like a conscience too for him.
Yes.
Good story. Yeah.
Yes. And so, it raises the question of girls playing on boys' teams, which I always felt was perfectly fine in those early grades,
mm-hmm.
Before boys begin to, hit puberty and become a little bigger and maybe stronger, not in all cases, but I'd say on the average. But the American coach doesn't believe in this at all. So as the games rise in importance, all of a sudden it's hard for the two girls to be able to step on the field, to the point where, in that last year before Zeke has, decides that he's had enough, they have quit the team. So they are part of the equation of the kids that are really important to Z who just suddenly disappear and make the whole experience a whole lot less fun for him because what he needs from the game, from the team at that point, is a lot of emotional support to get him through his family trauma. Mm-hmm. That's all, you know, part in developing a cast of characters,
right,
for the story who fit into the puzzle. Mm-hmm. So that's basically, you know, why the girls are on the team.
So with the current state of affairs where youth sports is being monetized like never before, is there any way to go back to the joy, or the train has left the station, the horse has left the barn, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, it's funny when I drive around my town, mm-hmm. At the start of fall, and I see all the youth soccer and football teams, you know, on the fields getting ready. And, you know, you see all the parents, not all, but many parents actually attending practices.
Yeah,
you know,
yes, yes.
Watching kids. And it makes me a little sad because, you know, I played organized sports growing up in Staten Island, which is why the book takes place in Staten Island. So I played organized basketball and baseball, but not under the scrutiny of my father or, you know, parents or, you know. But in addition to organized sports, the happiest memories I have of growing up were the times that me and my friends just played on our own, just choosing up our own sides in a schoolyard. And yeah, sometimes there were little scrapes when somebody got their feelings hurt or somebody tried to bully another kid. Mm-hmm. But we learned to work out all these issues on our own. And I just don't see that much anymore of kids playing whichever sport it is. And while this sport is soccer-centric, it really could apply to any team sport. I just don't see kids playing on their own that much anymore. So I don't think we're heading back to where we were 30, 40, 50 years ago. I think we have structured sports, youth sports, to the point where, the horse has left the barn. There's too much money to be made.
Yep.
Congress recently, there's a congressional committee chaired by a California Republican who's actually just declared himself an independent in Kevin Kiley, mm-hmm. Who chaired a committee that was exploring this issue and was citing the $40 billion number that was reported in the New York Times and saying, where are we headed with youth sports? I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for Congress to legislate against capitalism in this country.
Right.
But I think, you know, my book and many of the things that have raised the discussions on youth sports, where we're headed, it's most important to have these discussions and to have books like The Goal of the Game and have Congress mm-hmm. hold hearings and have media talk about this, because we need to enlighten the parents to make them, you know, take a look at what they might be spending on and when, mm-hmm. When they are spending this money on their kids. And maybe take a step back and start to think, like, do I really have to commit my child at the age of 7 or 8 right. to some academy and spend a lot of money? Or can I wait till they are 11 or 12 before, if they show they have the skills and the passion to do this, to make these commitments, make them more aware of what's at stake and the issues and the possibility that if they overdo it and they put too much pressure on their child at too young an age, they might actually work in reverse and they might actually drive their kids to the point where, like Z, they'll say, hold on a minute, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. So what I've been telling parents is pay attention to what your kids, their body language, pay attention to what they're telling you. Maybe they're the kind of kid who tries travel or select and then says, you know what, not for me. I'm ready to go back to play in the rec league. I'm happy with just that. That's good enough for me. Not every kid wants to be a professional or thinks they have what it takes. And we need to let them figure it out in many ways for themselves, what it is that they want from youth sports.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, Harvey, is that they're so serious about sports. Out here, I have my son, he plays baseball. And so we play fall ball and we play spring ball, but we don't do travel ball because I don't feel like driving to Arizona for just to play another team. He also does swimming. So three nights a week, he goes 90 minutes at a time. When he gets to the next level of swimming, he's going to have to swim five nights a week. So he's going to have to make a decision at that point. Can I play baseball? Do I want to play baseball or swim? Or I said something else, but you should have two activities. I like the fact that swimming is something you can do for your whole life. You use your whole body, your core. That's great. And baseball is a team sport and swimming is more of an individual sport. But it's difficult because I had so much fun as a kid playing. I'd play basketball sometimes. I'd play baseball sometimes. We'd play football a lot with pickup games with football. I played flag football in college. I played soccer in high school. And it just was more of a variety. And nowadays, kids are, you have to put so much time and so much focus into one sport. It does put a lot of pressure on performing in that one sport. And you're giving up the joy of playing different sports. Like my son will never play soccer. And it's the beautiful game because he has his times already allocated to swimming and baseball. Is there a response to that? And how do you advise parents in terms of how to deal with that with kids? I mean, I know my son, he gets out of school. I say, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to go home and decompress for a half hour. he's 12. So it's amazing.
Well, part of the for-profit mentality accompanying that, if you're going to basically drive a kid from a very early age, say 7, 8, to have their family invest all this money and time, drive to Arizona from California or right. Wherever, certainly you're also going to tell them, hey, if you really want to make it to become a D1 athlete or a professional, you shouldn't be wasting your time playing soccer if your true passion is baseball.
Right.
So, of course, that has ushered in the age of specialization. Medical people will tell you that you're probably better off playing a variety of sports to use those different muscles.
Right.
When my book first published, I have a local bookstore in my neighborhood. And so for several of my books, I have had book events and, sure. Local people come out. And for this particular book, instead of hearing me pontificate for an hour, I decided to put together a panel of young athletes. When I say young, people who are young adults, but who've had some success, in the world, in whatever their chosen sport. And I asked a young man who I'd known from around town, who was the lacrosse coach at one of the local parochial schools, Don Bosco Prep,
sure.
Here in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And, in interviewing them for this panel discussion, he said one of the most interesting things. This guy was like 6 foot, he's 6 foot six. So he went to the local private school, Montclair Kimberly Academy, where he was a soccer goalie in the fall, a basketball star, the center on their team during the winter. And he said that he only picked up lacrosse because the two sports that he thought he was on a track to go to college for were soccer and basketball. And he was being, from the seventh grade on, he had high schools recruiting him. And by the time he got to high school, he had colleges recruiting him. So he decided that there was so much pressure in those sports that he decided to just try lacrosse in the spring because his best friends in the high school were playing lacrosse. And just to get away from the pressure and all the coaches telling him you got to play full-time soccer or basketball, he picked up lacrosse just for the hell of it. Guess which sport he wound up playing at Syracuse University, D1, yeah. On scholarship, lacrosse. And now he's the lacrosse coach. He's making a living as a lacrosse coach for a premier high school. And he also just became like the head of New Jersey Interscholastic Lacrosse Association or some, whatever it's called. So it speaks to that whole issue that he wound up picking up a sport for fun, and it turned out he was so good at it that he wound up getting a scholarship to college away from the pressure of coaches telling him specialize. So, you know, it's so important for kids to just try stuff, just have fun. It goes back to what you said when we first started talking about this, the word joy. Where is the joy in youth sports if it's being completely blown away by the pressure to play at the advanced level when you're 7 or 8 years old and feel all that pressure, the pressure to specialize in one sport, play year round, to perhaps the point where you're just sick to death of it by the time you're 10. It's not going to lead to success, even if that was the intention in the first place. You really do just let kids be, just let kids have fun. And the last point I'll make about this, Robert, is that, you know, parents tend to believe that if they have a kid who's a pretty good athlete when they're young, if they throw enough cash at it, that they can create the elite athlete, right? And what I keep saying is your child is not an investment. They're not like a stock that at the age of 8, you're going to start investing money year by year. And by the time they're 18, that investment will grow into a college scholarship, NIL money, or perhaps even more. Your child is a young, developing human being. And that's the way you have to view their participation in youth sports. Let them experience, let them lay that foundation of love for it. Maybe by the time they're 12, 13, 14, you see a kid with the skills, the body that's necessary to play a sport on a serious level, and last but certainly not least, the passion to make that commitment. You know, so the same thing as a young musician. Mm-hmm. If you have a kid and who takes up guitar or violin at the age of 8 or 9, and you say, "Oh, look, they're pretty good," and you know the teacher who's been giving them the lesson says they got some potential. But if you're screaming at the kid every night, "You got to practice, you got to practice," you're going down the wrong road. If you see a kid who naturally goes upstairs and has the wherewithal and the love to pick that instrument up night after night and do the practice, what's required to grow as a musician, then maybe you have something. But if you have to force the issue, then you're really kind of investing a lot of money that you may as well be flushing down the toilet.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, because I see a lot of kids and I can tell they're schooled. And they've had coaches to teach them their swing. They've got the jewelry on. They've got the stuff under their eyes. They have their sliding gloves and everything, but they're not that good. And a lot of it is some kids are just better athletes than others. You can train somebody to a certain point, but you've got to have some, not only natural ability, but you have to have that desire, that passion to excel, that passion to win. And the other thing I think sometimes parents neglect is that, I'll give you an example, is the variety of sports can help in the sport that you want to focus on. Perfect example of that is my son is a swimmer and he's tall for his age, and he swims and swims and swims all the time, and he's great at freestyle. Well, what is he good at in baseball? He's a lights out pitcher. He's not the greatest at fielder. He's a pretty decent hitter, but he is lights out on the mound. And the reason why, he's got that whip action from swimming. And none of the other kids have that. And it is a real difference. And it's just an example of how, you know, diversifying in life also, just playing different sports can help you in the sport you want to focus on, and also give you more fun and more joy in the joy of sports itself overall. It doesn't just have to be one thing where you feel like you're being pounded on, that you have to get better and better at that one sport. And I understand the thinking. I understand the parents' thinking. But if you really want to bring out the joy for the kids and lessen the anxiety, keep things open, keep things fun, do whatever you can to make it a shared event that they're going to love. They're going to look back and say, "That was fun. I really had a great time." What do you think about that, Harvey?
Well, listen, I always make a point of saying that I don't want to be misunderstood that I'm saying that that gifted athletes should not have a special place to compete against kids essentially in the same category, right? I'm just pointing out that the ages of 8, 9, 10, 11 are not the time to be making those distinctions and investments. I've been blessed and privileged my entire career to cover the world's greatest athletes, you know, from the late 70s into the 80s, the era of McEnroe and Borg to Federer and Nadal, Bird and Magic to LeBron and Curry. These are all unique individuals. They're one in 10,000 or 20,000. And the one thing I've been able to ascertain in covering these guys and gals around the world, you know, all different sports, is that at the core, they love what they do.
Exactly.
They love what they do. And somewhere in their development, you know, they were allowed to just explore sport for the true joy of competing and the embracing of that pressure.
Okay.
But, you know, you're not going to professionalize a kid at the age of 8. You got to let them grow into their bodies, into their minds, into all of the what makes a great athlete.
Okay, great. Perfect place to end our conversation. Unfortunately, we do have to end it because of some time constraints for radio. But goal of the game, Harvey Arreton. Thank you so much for being back on Guys, Guys Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, Harvey Arreton.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, an amazing conversation with the Pulitzer Prize nominated journalist and author Harvey Arreton. Again, the name of the book is Goal of the Game, and it is it scores big time. It is an amazing book, and I think it's a great book because I think a teen could read it and really get a lot out of it as well as an adult. I read it and I think it's fantastic, and I really it was a great reminder because I'm an assistant coach on my son's baseball team and he's 12, and like, wow, we've got to do more things to help these kids rediscover the joy in playing kids' sports and not just making it all about winning, winning, winning. It's just tough. it makes it really tough on these kids. I didn't see from our conversation with Harvey that this is going to go away anytime soon. So we have to, as parents, work on this on an individual basis, make sure that we put things into perspective for our kids. Now, if you may have a very special kid who could make it all the way to the professional leagues, but for most of the other kids, you know, you want them to have fun while they're playing the sport that they have a passion for. And that's what it's really all about, finding the joy. And usually when you find the joy, you can have a better performance anyhow, instead of all of this anxiety that I see where the kids really feel like they're under pressure to perform. And a lot of it is self-induced, but nevertheless, it's pressure. And I think what we want to rediscover once again is the joy in playing youth sports. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.